and welcome to episode 267 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where the small press makes one hell of a big noise. I'm Vince Hunt, writer of the comic MI666, and joining me this week are the creator of Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
And the driver of the original Mystery Machine, it's Tony Esmond.
You're right.
Yeah.
I'm glad. I thought it was going to be something else there, because I've just changed the what the pod thing is going to be later.
Oh, really? Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
It's just us three this week. We've got some exciting guests lined up for the next couple of months. But, yeah, we're just going to have a bit of fun.
We just booked next week, haven't we? Dan, you've just booked next week, haven't you?
We have, yeah. Very excited about the guests, because we didn't have a chance to speak to them.
Them last time. I don't think we perhaps should be saying at this point, but we have been approached by a major conglomerate to take something over. So we'll probably talk about that in the weeks to come, won't we?
Yeah. In the weeks to come.
Business come a call into the ACP.
Yeah.
Certain times.
You know what I mean? We're in this times of uncertainty. Who are you going
to... They want to go to a steady hand, a reliable person.
I mean, we are trustworthy. You can believe every single word we say.
Trustworthy and sexy, I believe, is what it said in the contract.
Yep. They bolded.
We've got
sexy.
Our legal team are on it. Our legal team are on it at the moment.
Yeah. So there's exciting things ahead for this 2 hours of bullshit that we do a week. but yes, this week we're just going to have a bit of fun and talk about some great comics. And we brought up a topic that we put a little shout out just before we started recording. And we had some great feedback on.
We did, didn't we? All of a sudden, I didn't think you were going to put it out because I'm off Twitter, so I only looked at it through my browser a minute ago. But I've got loads, like 20, 30 replies.
And it's very much in this time of uncertainty where sometimes comics are at each other's throats. We just wanted to talk about something nice, fun, something that makes you reminisce about like the comics you love. But we'll get on to
the good old days.
The good old days. Every day on
the show.
Remember those
days? Everyone was positive about comics. Do you remember those days?
Yeah. Do you remember when they were fun?
Just about. But I am old.
Perhaps
the dark
should...
times now.
That.
ACP the wilderness years.
Oh no! Comics are always.
Do you know what else is fun?
What else is fun, Tony?
Oh, don't give it. You always give it to me as like a punishment for saying something.
All you have to say is the word. I'm not. I will.
What's my safe word again? Oh, Comic House. Talking about something else.
Comic House. Our lovely sponsor. Yes. They sponsor this show every week. God bless them. But if you don't know about Comic House by now, or maybe this is your first show, if this is your first show listening, what can we say?
Fucking hell.
Sorry, my friend.
Welcome.
Although I think Chris Stetz, shout out to Chris. He's going to start listening this week, so it might be Chris's first podcast. So I apologise in advance, Chris.
Yeah. We may actually say something of worth in the next hour and a half.
Only accidentally.
But it will be completely by accident. But, you know, the only thing that isn't by accident is the amazing amount of comics you can get at Comic House, because that's all on purpose, baby. And they bring you a fantastic selection.
This is what you get, Chris.
Chris, that's what you call smooth, my friend.
Yep.
Listen and learn.
Yeah, we do it. We're doing this for you, Chris. Just want to know this.
Let's not overdo it. We'll put him off.
Yeah, that's true. It's true. If you do listen to the show, let us know and we'll put a shout out to you. We will dedicate a sponsorship ad.
Dedicate a sponsorship ad to somebody who writes in. I like that idea.
Yes. This week we're brought to you by Comic House and Chris. But if you go to comichouse.com, you can see there's a huge selection of titles on the database. Loads of indie creators and small press comics and indie comics are on there. People who are self-publishing, they can list their book on there for free. It's another avenue to start selling your books. They also have an app, which is adding new stuff all the time. It's not like one of those services where comics disappear. I haven't seen anything disappear. You know, like when you're watching a streaming video service and you've seen a TV show
that's
on there.
Become quite controversial during my time in lockdown. That's rather annoyed me quite a lot. That
what
where things are only on streaming TV services for a while, and you go back to look for it, and it's gone.
It's fucked off. I was halfway through fucking Critters, and then they changed it from free to had to pay.
No,
for it.
Hold on. You were halfway through
Critters. No, it wasn't. It didn't happen there and then. Like,
you know,
I'll watch that tomorrow, and then I'll turn it on tomorrow, and I had to pay for it.
Oh.
That sucks.
You won't get any of that nonsense.
People, we just come through the war. VE Day, Victory in Japan, rather, was just, look, that's what people fought in the war for, was Netflix. And you know what I mean? That's fucking outrageous.
Yeah, unbelievable. Jesus. I don't know if I can finish
My
this.
Buddy didn't die face down in the mud in Nam.
Exactly.
You pull critters off of the fucking streaming service.
Yes. It's our freedom or nothing, my friend. I'm saying now.
Butt masks. Now, do wear a mask.
Yeah, just don't take vaccines. No, do take them. I don't know what I mean.
I feel like, you know, at the end of the third Pirates of the Caribbean, when the villain's walking at the end of the ship and it's exploding around him. that's what this ad is, and this ad is for Comic House. Yes, if you
on the ad.
If you go on the app, the longest sponsorship ads in the world. That's what we do on this show, and it's all for you, Chris. It's all for you.
Yeah. I'm Chris. Yeah. No, come back, Chris. Come back.
No, really, no, don't stop. Please, you listen. It'll get better, I swear. But this show occasionally gets better, but it's always great on Comic House. And if you go to the app, there's loads of comics. What's on there at the moment, Dan?
We've got Irrelevant Zero by Stuart Morain, also known as... I've not read that one. Also known as by Marcosia. In the Shadow of the Wasteland by Marcosia. And Abraham King, The Hand of Glory.
Why did you say like that? Abraham!
I kind of like... Abraham.
Funky and jiving, man. I don't know what's happening there.
So the title was Abraham King, The Hand of Glory. I thought it was getting a bit religious on me. And then Autism Anxiety, Volume 1, Issue 2, Change by Sam Webster.
I look forward to reading the second issue, but I like the first issue. So there you go. Yeah.
And we've got loads of issue of a comic called Rain by Envision Comics UK. I've not seen that one before. And Camp VA07 by Friend of the Show. Check that one out.
Mr. McCulloch in the house.
So quite a few new titles on Comic House.
Yes.
Plus a whole lot more.
So now is the time to get involved with Comic House. You can find out more by going to comichouse.com. There's a 14-day free trial. And it's a subscription service, but it's only like £3 a month, which, I'm sorry, is an absolute steal. It is an absolute steal. I mean...
And I believe the code's still active as well.
Is it the code Stay Safe? You get an extra month free.
Not only is it a code, it's a metaphor for your life.
Yes.
You wear a mask.
We will
don't vaccinate.
We will now to go to comichouse.com.
We're like free range jazz on that advert. That was good.
Forward to Pete's comments on that.
We would
weekly bollocking.
We would.
Well, I'd like to see Pete. I think he should give us a bollocking. To be fair, I think we deserve one. So feel free, give us a bollocking, Pete, and we'll read it out on air. How's that? I like that. Yeah.
You know, there's no such thing as bad PR, is there?
Have you seen Marvel's Twitter?
Oh, dear.
I nearly made an off-colour joke there, but I've reined it in.
Yeah, well done. Well done, Dan. I mean, we know what Dan's like off-air.
There's a line.
So,
there's a fucking line.
We know how much he does rein himself in every week. Seriously, people, you do not understand what a beast this man is. But seriously though, that leads me to a topic that I think we'll kick off. But before we get into our main topic for this week, I know sometimes when we finish the Comic House ad and we always sort of say, "Oh God," and then it's becoming more frequent that we finish being positive about comics and Comic House, and then we complain about something that's out in the in the direct market in the wider comics world.
We have said to try and get more positive.
Yes.
To be fair, I don't think we're relentlessly negative, but
no.
I think in these days we
board on sarcasm quite a lot, but you know,
satire, people, satire.
We're trying to keep the right side of the dial and keep it positive and not swing the other way.
That's the point. There's enough. Yeah. Oh my God, I've been off. I told you guys earlier. I've had a week off Twitter this week, and it's just so lovely. It's like the nicest week. A week off Facebook, week off Twitter, and I've just been on Instagram and the 11 o'clock comic Slack, and it's been like the nicest week.
Mm. Fuck me, Facebook's like a safe haven for me.
It's a bit.
On Twitter, you're going out the hopper into the fucking tsunami.
That's the world we live in. But, you know, we shall see how our opinions change on that as the year goes on. But in terms of comics, now this is a question to my lovely co-hosts, my wonderful sexy co-hosts, as well as to you people out there, because I am genuinely intrigued by this and a little bit disheartened in some ways. I know there's there's loads of great comics out there. If you look at the Kickstarters and everything that's at the moment, there's some amazing indie comics that are being made, being published. Like, I mean, I looked at the list that I've pledged on Kickstarters, and it made me think, what are you doing? You don't have that money.
I pledged to Kickstarters, and I think I just kind of occasionally do it because I feel the pressure.
Yeah. Well, I don't so much have that, but I'm finding that there's a lot of good stuff on there.
There is.
Yeah.
It's gone gangbusters over lockdown, isn't it? It's really coming to its own, which I'm glad.
Away from Kickstarter, away from those wonderful people self-publishing their art books, comics, whatever you're doing, let's go to the magical new comic book day that is Wednesday, okay?
Do our covers again this week.
This is not much to choose from. Yeah, this is the day that is normally this is the day to get excited about, isn't it? Over all of the years, this is the time when, yes, let's see what comics are coming out. What is the new stuff that's coming out? And I know, obviously, with the bastard virus, whatever, it had a knock-on effect to publishers and this, that, and the other, and publishers are having issues, etc. But I haven't really seen much over the past, like, probably month. When I go to that, you know, I mean, I don't have a pull list like Tony Esmond, whose pull list is, I mean, what's a word to describe it, Tony? Dan?
Mortgage like.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Titanic. Intimidating.
It's intimidating. Yes. Yeah. The amount of comics he buys.
To my bank manager.
Yeah. But normally, I would pick up one or two titles a week, just on Comixology, for instance, just digitally. Yeah. I'd browse through and think, that looks quite cool. It's been a few weeks and I haven't bought anything.
I don't think everyone's back to normal yet, are they? No. I think there's that to be said.
There is that to be said, but
just
that,
about they're just about not they're not completely. I reckon they're like 60-70%, aren't they, at the moment? A lot of the companies.
Yes, but even away from those companies, do you know what I mean? Because I'm someone that's like looking at a lot of, you know.
We look at the hinterlands, don't we? We look at the little indie publishers and stuff because we're mostly looking for stuff to review on here, aren't we? Recommend on here.
Yeah.
So we kind of that's where I go with it.
And
listeners
who have been with us for a while will know the amount of times I've said, I bought this on Comixology this week. You know, I've done it so many times on this show.
Yeah.
But recently, it's just, there's less out there. Is it because everyone's currently making comics and they're doing their Kickstarters and stuff? There's less of a weekly release schedule? I don't know, man. There is a big list of comics. There is a list of comics, but nothing's really grabbing me so much. I mean, what does that mean?
I can only speak to what I know, and that's from No Brown. I know we pulled back a little bit on our slate. We extended the slate. We've made things coming out later next year and stuff like that. Just because it was an uncertain financial landscape at the time. Do you know what I mean?
So I think we
have pulled back. We've still got lots of books on the slate, but we staggered them a bit better till we're more aware of what's going on. And I wonder whether that can be extrapolated into the bigger companies, you know?
Yeah. Maybe. It's, I don't know. Has New Comic Book Day forever been changed? Especially with the digital landscape?
I think it's going to change and change again. I think we're going through a few cycles of changes now. I think we've had monumental moments that have changed comics companies, you know, in a way that they haven't changed for decades, haven't we, recently? Valiant don't have an office now. They seemingly are people working from home and the changes at DC. So I think we have to we're going to see a few changes of, is it going to be digital? Is it not going to be digital? What are they going to put out? Is it worth putting out this book? Is it going to make enough money on digital? I think there's a lot of people doing the maths, aren't there, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. They're also, in terms of the digital, there is a strange sort of pricing is bound to put a lot of people off at the moment, I think. I hate to say it. I understand why prices will always go up for things.
They're going up and down a bit at the moment. They seem to be... They keep changing, don't they, at the moment? They were fairly static for a long time, weren't they? You could work out which one was going to be. And then after a month, they dropped to another price, which you knew it was going to be. But seems to be a bit all over the place at the moment.
There was that period when they basically said, stop drawing, stop creating comics for a while. So I presume we're hitting that kind of lull of where there wasn't people creating, so there's not stuff coming out. I think that has resumed, as far as I'm aware. So we'll hopefully see more stuff coming out.
I suppose it's resumed for quite a few. I think it's what I understand it. Yeah, not everyone, maybe. I mean, you've got to look at, Exo Man of War, I wrote the review of in February, I think. and the first issue came out, that, you know, that again, it got a bit of publicity, and, you know, Valiant was sticking it in their mailer and you were seeing it on Twitter. And then the next issue two isn't out until, is it October, I think?
Fuck, man.
You know, and I actually thought I'd missed it on my pull list or something. I was going to write to the, I was going to ring the distributors who, you know, I'll get my pull list through and say, well, you know, have you forgotten about EXO? And then I saw a thing that said, oh, it's not out until late in the year.
Because once, like, when you get everyone in, then you can start strong. But obviously, if you've got a massive gap between one and two, it's almost negated. It's kind of,
it's almost got to relaunch again, haven't you? Yeah.
God, let's move off of this because we're going into dangerous territory.
Well, I mean, to also twist into the positives. Surely, there's a lot more to be said for creators who are now not necessarily going through those mainstream distribution models like the Comixology or the Amazon and stuff, and doing selling things for themselves. The online stores.
No, Alterna have gone that way, haven't they?
Yeah,
Comixology and Out of Diamond.
With the online stores, where it be your Big Cartels, your Gumroads, just everything, and like sharing on social media, whatever platform you do.
I can just understand that Christian Wildgoose put up a tweet today about piracy. And there's a title he worked on for DC, and the downloads or reads of it was fucking astronomical. Yeah. And I think there's some concerns that Pete Sametti mentioned about digital piracy.
Is that why he's come off Comixology, is it, I suppose?
It might well be, yeah. He was concerned about that, and I can understand that. I mean, Christ, I don't mean to be that guy about fucking piracy, but this is not an industry like the film industry where you fucking download a copy of it, it's not going to hurt the bottom line. It does hurt comics big time, as you can see with the period we're going through now. It's pretty fucking tragic.
I mean, I was using the example of when I was in the line at New York Comic Con last year, and there was, you know, tens of thousands of people in that line, and I saw nobody reading a comic apart from me. Yeah. And I looked over a couple of times at different people as the sort of queue moved around, and they were all reading comics on their phone. And I can tell you now, that wasn't Comixology or anything like that.
Okay, it's just
that
PDFs.
Was all pirate sites, You see, quite a lot when people go, "Oh, well, this is a great issue," and you, along the bottom of it, it says something, "Read comics for free" or something like that, and you think,
"Yeah,
oh right." Oh, so I know where you got that from, my friend.
A bit naughty. Yeah. Like, I wanted that fucking Mega Hex book, and I found it on one of those read here sites, and I was like, "Well, I'm going to buy this." That's what I got fucked over, but I do plan on getting that book at some point, and I've not read the site because it's completely unearned, all that credit that they're getting.
I
think it's just one of those things, you have to make it easier and cheaper to get it through the app or through the actual people distributing it, as opposed to going to these pirate sites. And then you've got to be a bit more proactive about getting these pirate sites offline.
Yeah, I don't know what the answer is. I really don't know what the answer is. It's so difficult, isn't it? And even on eBay, you see these discs going around of, like, you can get all the, you know, the copies of the comic on a disc or something, and they seem to have been on eBay for decades.
Yeah. I bought that one for the Action Force collector in the UK because I can't get it.
Right.
Otherwise, I have to track down all the single fucking issues. And it's like, if you got all that shit in a trade, I'd buy it like yesterday.
Yeah, people don't care, though. I mean, amount of English people, UK, British people who were watching The Mandalorian before we had Disney and were putting up on Twitter about it. It seemed to be nobody just bats an eye about it anymore, don't they, I suppose?
Yeah. I guess they must factor in so much of a kind of, this is how much people are going to do it for. That's why I think kind of like having a staggered release schedule and anything like that is foolish in today's climate.
If
you don't release it all in the same day all over the world, it'd be pirated the next day.
Yeah, that's true.
There we go.
Yeah. So interesting times in comics, but we are always on the lookout.
I tell you, I bought loads of Etsy stores and stuff. I just bought Mark Jackson's new Thomas Magnum comic. I bought that today off an Etsy store. I'm more likely to do that these days, I would say, to support small press. I bought a book I'm going to talk about later off a store this week. And
I've totally been the same. I've really, since this whole debacle that the world seems to be in, I'm going to direct to creators, or as I did today, I pre-ordered two books from our friends at Avery Hill.
Nice,
good stuff.
So, which we'll probably, we'll be talking more about those books, etc., in the future. That's all I'm going
to
say.
And it often makes more sense to order it from the creator or the publisher, because Amazon take a bite.
Diamond
take a bite. If you can go straight to, you know, Avery Hill or Nobrow, wherever it's going to be, and buy the book from them, then plus, somehow it's a little bit more organic and a little bit better, I think, you know.
Yeah, and plus you get these wonderful extra, if you want into extras and things like that, you get like book plates and you get like, you know, bookmarks and a bit of original art, or you get anything, you know. People just want their artwork out there, so, you know, keep on doing what you're doing, people. And but fear not, although we may be worried about like the bigger world, the bigger market of comics, we know that there's people making amazing books out there. And
you know what? No matter how bad it is, and you know, or allegedly how bad people say it is, I've got a room just for comics. You've been here, Vince. I'll let you in.
Yeah.
And I go up here, and it's like fucking, what's that room in the TARDIS where he goes when he's really stressed? You know, it's like that. I go there, and I'm surrounded by fucking brilliant comics from 80 years, and I look at them and I read them, and it's the best thing ever. And it's that's
it's
all
your,
I want.
It's your fortress of solitude, isn't it?
It is a bit, isn't it? Yeah. Yeah, it is a bit. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, and I did have to sort of go through like a decontamination sort of shower I walked in and as I walked out. So it was strange. I thought the rubber onesie was a bit much, Tony. But that's
You have to be naked when you read comics. I've told you that before. So yeah,
that's the reason. There's no other way.
No other way. Oh dear.
Back to the night porter.
Anyway, Google that, people. Google it. all those browsers ruined. No, this week we thought we'd have a bit of fun, and we wanted to talk about some comics that brought smiles to our faces and creators and stuff. And we're just throwing some topics about and ideas for things to talk about. We wanted to talk about some great comics that we loved, and some artists and creators, writers, creators, whoever, that we're fans of, or maybe we're bigger fans of, maybe not so much now, but who knows, because a person's career always goes up and down, isn't it? Sometimes there's the evergreen creators, and then there's the people that, you know, for 5 to 10 years they were the best thing you ever,
and then the industry turns their back on them.
Or their style completely changes.
That's happened, isn't it?
So we thought, you know, what is that comic series? What is that issue? What is that book? You know, for some people, they can refine it down to a very specific individual issue. Sometimes a panel, which, you know, some people we push out on Twitter before the show, and fair play to anyone who's showed us a particular panel or page or moment in a book. That made you and like just an instant fan of this a particular creator.
Wasn't it Lee Grice? Was it Lee Grice who put up the one about Alan Moore and the Roebuster story?
Yes,
he said. I think he said something like just this panel, didn't he?
Yeah,
I think.
Okay.
Yeah,
I'll just find it, because we did have. I mean, we put it up literally about half an hour before we recorded, and we had so many of you lovely people get in touch.
Baxter Burner in the 2008 annual 1982. I remember it very well, my friend. Yeah. And he also mentions Night Force One, which is a great little series as well.
Yeah. And he said, introduce me to both Alan Moore and Steve Dillon, and it was love at first sight. He also says, I discovered Marv Wolfman and Gene Colan with Night Force number one, which rewrote my brain and led me to the DC Universe, the horror genre, and Stephen King. And it's that we want to talk about. We want those halcyon days when you were a kid, or when you were younger, or whenever you discovered comics, actually, because you might have just discovered them. So for you, you know, imagine that time when you picked up a book and you thought, this is quite cool, and maybe you opened it up and all of a sudden you just fell in love. Or you finished reading it and then suddenly realised, who wrote this? You know, what is this? And you know, made you an instant fan. Because we're all here. You're listening to this probably because that has happened to you at some point. It happened to all of us. Even if we can't.
And it keeps happening to me. Do you know what I mean? I think I had trouble coming up with what I was going to come up, but there's always these little revelations, you know.
Yeah.
They happen to you, aren't they?
And we're going to mention a whole heap of names, you know, classic, modern, whatever. I mean, there's a lot of great Indian small press creators as well that we can say this about. We're probably not going to name so many of them purely because we don't want to show favoritism on the show. And also, we might be just doing the old fuddy duddy of like, when I was a kid and I went into the newsagent. We'll be doing a lot of that, because that's for us. That was those moments that just injected comics into our veins, and it's been there ever since. So, with that in mind, Who wants to go first?
Go on, V, you go first, because you just told me what yours is, and I want to hear it. I want to know which little era of it is.
Well, this my history with comics, and it's probably the same with a lot of UK people, and we've said it before on the show, it can't be said it was a solid run from issue one of something, or I didn't realise at the time, because it was whatever comics you could get at a particular time.
Yeah.
And sometimes they were reprints of things. I'll probably get into it later, but there's certainly some of the Punisher reprints which made me a massive fan of a lot of those artists there.
Yeah.
But there was one book and one title that, and I think it was just another one of those, never had a complete run of it, but I would pick up issues whenever I saw the logo, especially you, and it had such a logo that I was like, oh, it's great, it's that one, and the character's creations, and it was a particular artist. Now, the artist is Alan Davis, and you know where I'm going with this by now, surely. This book is Excalibur.
Yeah.
Nice. And we're talking about, and what I've got in front of me here, I've got an epic collection, The Sword is Drawn, which is an absolutely stonking book.
What would you pay for an epic? They're not cheap, man. Look at your money.
Well, yeah, the thing is, I could go through and try and find the individual sort of, you know, small arcs or things like that. But with this one, which has got, you know, I rarely go out and buy big versions or something, but this has got like Captain Britain 1 and 2, Excalibur 1 to 11, Special Edition of Mojo Mayhem, and Material for Marvel Comics Presents 31 to 38, and the Marvel Mighty World of Marvel 7, 14 and 15. So, you know, this is it's a thick book. And certainly rereading it was certainly an experience, because I haven't properly read Excalibur for like probably 20 odd years, do you know what I mean, since I was a kid and reading them.
Yeah.
And that's a mind-blowing and crazy title.
You know, so I like to think it took the weirdness that I remember seeing in Captain Britain series, you know, and it took all that fucking nutty weirdness and put it in an American comic, and I think that's why it really appealed to me as well.
Completely. And looking back on it, you know, it suddenly made me realise that, oh yeah, I did I did have a copy of Excalibur number one, or I did have this issue. And looking back and seeing certain panels or certain pages just completely brings back the I mean, we love nostalgia. Who doesn't love nostalgia? The whole, you know, that's a lot of what this hobby that we love so much is built on a lot of the time. But it made immediately, I know that Chris Claremont sort of wrote this, and but I'm not talking about Chris Claremont. This
walnut immediate head.
This made me a fan of Alan Davis, and a lifelong fan of Alan Davis. Now, I'm not going to turn around and say I've bought everything he's ever done, you know, or followed him through everything since then. But I can say without a doubt that if I see a bit of Alan Davis artwork, it will bring a smile to my face. I sit here.
Well, I do remember you sitting down next to him once and him showing you how he drew, and you came back to me like, oh my God, I can't believe that happened.
Yes.
Was that Bristol, wasn't it?
That was at Bristol, yeah. The last Bristol Comic Con was on. I'm sat in front of my desk, and right above my head.
Oh, is that print you got?
Is an Alan Davis.
Was it John Carter?
John Carter, yeah. It was a print of 1 of 25, and like, you know. And he signed it, and I just sat down and had a chat with him, and it was just sort of,
he's a nice guy, isn't he?
Do you know what I mean? For someone to create such iconic looks, and, you know, probably have been asked about, you know, Captain Britain's design or things so many times, and he didn't bat an eyelid. He was just like, oh, I just wanted to, you know, I based it on this, that, and the other, and I was like, oh God, that's fascinating. You know, rather than be one of those, oh God, they're asking me about that again. Which, you know, I mean, I don't think that a lot of these classic creators or older creators, I don't think they're like that, are they? I think if you ask them about their creations, they're pretty open about doing it, I would imagine.
I like the older creators because they're not sort of looking over your shoulder to see the next cool person they can talk to. Do you know what I mean? They're just like steady work guys, you know.
Yeah.
A lot of talent, but not a lot of, you know, bravado about it, which is nice.
And like, certainly when I was getting into sort of reading the American comics, should we say, because obviously I started off with the Beano and the battles and all this, but, you know, when the American comic sort of craze hit me, Excalibur was one that to my day, to this day, that run, that initial run, where you've got like Megan, Captain Britain, you've got the Rachel Phoenix, it was Rachel Summers, wasn't it? Shadowcat and Nightcrawler. A nice, small team. None of this, you know, obviously, as the book had started, there was a massive event. The X-Men were apparently all dead, so it was about a team just sort of regrouping. And like, but just Alan Davis's artwork absolutely sings and soars, and there's such a poetry and fluidity about it. And it's interesting looking at these sort of collections, and I think these collections are interesting. That when you do have 10, 11 issues of an artist that you absolutely love, and then the next issue is one that, do you know what I mean? It's almost like like you've been listening to classical music, and then you turn it to Radio One. You're like, this is beautiful. And that's not to put a downer.
We talked a little bit about this earlier. It's also what your eye gets into. Yeah. Your eye adjusts per series sometimes, which is why it's nice to have a consistent run.
Yeah.
You get your eye in, don't you, with some creators? I mean, even if it's like, I don't know, Gene Cullen on Tomb of Dracula or something like that. It's not the artist. If you transferred him on another book, you think, oh, okay. But it's that nice consistent run that you got with Davis on that, and he got everyone, didn't he? You know.
Yeah, and I know certainly there was a Clandestine. Do you remember that?
Remember that one.
That was a creator. He created that as well, didn't he? But that's still a Marvel IP, I think, isn't it?
I think you're right, man. Yeah, I think so. Yeah, because isn't it? They do a crossover with the X-Men and the Avengers at some point as well in that series.
Yeah. That was a very.
I never read any of that. I don't think.
I remember having.
It wasn't my favourite thing he did.
It was very strange and esoteric, wasn't it? It was weird and out there. I remember having the first issue, and it had like a holographic cover. Those days. And I didn't
that's
have
a little bit of the soul that I felt with this Excalibur. I don't know why. And I hate to say it's maybe Claremont's touch as well, is the humour in Excalibur was what made it its own X-Men book rather than just being another X-Men book. You know?
There is that. I mean, as an older reader now, and you look through it and you think, this is a Claremont book, so many words. everyone's talking all the time. So to have that and still get across a kinetic, you know, dynamic panels where, you know, the facial acting, there's real emotional beats that go on.
Here's a question for you then about Excalibur, directed UV, right? Okay. Mm-hmm. Right. I'm suddenly I'm Doctor Strange and I can transport you into that world. You get transported in there and you become immediately very attractive to women, even more so than you are now. And you get to choose to go on a date with a member of Excalibur. Who do you choose?
Who'd you
go on a date with? And you might get lucky at the end of it. That's what you got to consider. No. Who'd you go on a date with?
Got to be Nightcrawler.
Yeah. He's a priest, you perv.
Megan.
Megan, oh, look at you. Rachel, it's got to be Rachel. That's filth. She's got filth written all over, isn't she? She wears a dog collar half the time. What's that all about?
I mean, yeah. All right, then. Well, we got our picks. Dad's picked Nightcrawler. I mean,
there you go. One for the reader, one for the listeners. Yeah. There you go.
Wonderful. I may, based on whatever they pick later, I may ask them that question back to them, listeners. So apologies in advance.
You'll have trouble with my pick, my friend. Yeah. One of them will be quite a good cuddler.
Yeah. Yeah. So for me, I think, Excalibur and Alan Davis. But like I say, I didn't want. Fair play to all you people that can pick out specific issues. And then later on, there may be specific issues that I'm going to talk about for other creators. But for Excalibur, it was definitely, there was a few issues that I didn't necessarily have sequentially, but that just made me an immediate fan of Alan Davis. I don't think many people can disagree with that.
I think I loved him. I loved him from, well, I saw him in Harry when he did, Harry 20 Rock, didn't he, in 2000 AD? But when he started doing Captain Britain, I was like, oh my God, what is this?
Yeah.
He like really captured me, and he kept me for years.
I remember the, because it was, I I didn't discover those Captain Britain issues until long after Excalibur.
So it went back and found them after Excalibur.
Yeah,
sort of thing.
Yeah. But I always used to remember, like, there was sometimes when you pick up a comic and on the back, some of the reprints and stuff, especially with the UK comics, there was the Alan Davis sort of classic. You know, when he's got like one of his biceps is like in the foreground and he's just sort of looking up Captain Britain, like in his costume, he's just looking up at the reader. And I remember just thinking, that looks awesome. Where can I get that from?
Yeah.
And just couldn't find it. And then he was in Excalibur and it was like, yes. I think it was partly that costume as well. That Captain Britain costume is still one of my...
You really like that, don't you?
I just love it. Absolutely love it. So that's my one. So it was just quite nice to reminisce about all that.
Yeah. Do you want to talk a little bit about that art thing that we talked about now then? Is that worth it?
Well, I think we'll talk about that when I get onto another creator, unless Dan mentions him.
Are we doing more than one? I didn't realise that.
We'll bounce around. I think we've got one specific one, but I wanted to give another creator, who I think is going to be on a lot of people's lists. Probably a little bit.
All right, do you want to go last then? Should we do that?
Did
you want to read a couple of the tweets out? Or?
Yes, I'll do another couple. Let's go through this list. Dave Robertson, recent guest on the show, he said the first one that comes to mind is Al Williamson drawing The Empire Strikes Back.
Oh, yeah, I like that. Okay. I got that in that little sort of paperback novel one. That's how I got it, and it was good, yeah. Yeah.
Richard Sheaf, he says Jeff Smith's bone for certain.
Yeah.
What started out as a beautiful piece of whimsical storytelling turned out to be something so much more. Still look out for his stuff. His facial expressions are the best. Does so much with so few lines.
Sorry, man. I've got the one from Al Henderson saying Norm Brayfugle, Detective Comics 601, and that's a hell of a cover, isn't it?
Mm.
That's an amazing cover, actually. Mm. That's all cloak, but you can tell exactly what's going on, can't you?
Mm.
Yeah.
Who else we got? Kirk Spencer. He says, I was slow to embrace Kirby. I thought this one was quite interesting because the book he mentions. I was slow to embrace Kirby. The Dingbats of Danger Street helped me to embrace his comic book magic.
Yeah. So that was a series, first issue special. They've just done a hardback of it, actually. I bought it and it's good. And it's sort of, they kind of did it to introduce or reintroduce characters. And each issue was the first issue, kind of, but that was number six. And each issue had a different one in it, Manhunters in one. It's a good little run. It's an interesting collection. Yeah, it's good stuff.
Yeah, I'd never seen that one before. Mm. Norm Conyu just says Jack Kirby's The Eternal series for sure. There's a few people that said Jack Kirby, actually.
Yeah.
The Eternal series for sure. It was already done and dusted when I discovered it, but led me to Commandy as well.
I love them both. One of my favourite Kirby books is the Eternals Annual. I don't know why, I absolutely love it. Tom Curry said Kirby as well, didn't he? Yeah. Struggled to get into Kirby when reading Old Thor, but I found this collected issue of New Gods and it was like everything made sense. I was chatting to Tom on messaging about that book as he was reading it, and it was really interesting to see new eyes on it. And I genuinely think it's one of the great accomplishments of comics is New Gods. It's just incredible.
Yeah, that's fun.
He was 50 when he drew that, so that's pretty impressive stuff.
We thought we'd mention all the Jack Kirby ones kind of there. We do have a Jack Kirby episode in our vaults if you want to hear us go in depth a bit about Jack Kirby, which is one of the most fun episodes.
We really like that one. I think we ended up, didn't I send you a couple of books to read and we talked about them?
Yeah,
really.
Miracle Man, there's a couple of other ones as well.
Yeah.
So we'll mention a couple of others as well as we go on. But who wants to go next?
Dan, I'm happy to go next. Yeah. My one's just generally Eric Larson stuff. I mean, I came into it like you, Vince, with the collections in like the newsagents. You know, you used to do that like the complete Spider-Man, the four comics. And then after reading it and that, I was like, fuck me, I've got to get on this. So ended up going down to like the local comic. Well, I say local, it was in Croydon. But there was like one in Inshops. I think it's called the Phantom Zone.
I think I know the one you mean. Yeah, where the tram stops now.
Yes, that's the one.
Yeah.
And there used to be a comic shop in there. And then I just started getting Amazing Spider-Man. I used to actually double dip because I'd get the collected one that was in the newsagent and then that one. And I was just absolutely blown away.
A lot of detail on those pages, man, isn't there?
Yeah, I mean, he's changed his art style over the years. But when, like, first seeing that his artwork, just going above and beyond, he did have to follow McFarlane, didn't he? When I think McFarlane was on there and then he took over.
Yeah.
So that's kind of...
I think so,
Was it the other way around?
Was he were doing, and then McFarlane took over.
Well, McFarlane then got—I can't remember. I should know this. I've just forgotten. One of those things I've just forgotten. But I know McFarlane got his own title, didn't he?
Yeah, he spun off, didn't he?
Yeah, and yeah, that might be how it worked. And then he was on Amazing, wasn't he?
He said in 1999, yeah. Eric Larson replaced Todd on The Amazing Spider-Man.
Ah, cool.
So yeah. So he jumped off onto that. But like, then he went on to do Savage Dragon. I've got so many memories of getting that, buying the issues. There was me and about four friends, and we were fucking right at the peak time when Image started. And many people kind of look back on Image now and deride it, me included. But at the time, it was like, this is fucking something new and amazing. And we were like, every fucking week was going down seeing what new Image titles there were. And I think one of my favorites first off was Savage Dragon.
Yeah.
And his stuff on there was just amazing. And
just hit 250. That's an accomplishment, isn't it?
Yeah. I think it's one of the longest running independent superhero comics.
Yeah.
Like from like the creator. I think he's done all the issues.
I think that's right. There. Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
But I remember reading stories like about how he would make comic books in school with his mate at the time, Glenn something. But that really struck me because there was like me and another couple of guys who we used to make our own little comic books by like getting A4 paper, fold it in half with staples, and then we'd do like draw a page aside and then you'd give it to your friend to carry on the comic. That's cool. And then we'd have like a comic by the end of the week or whatever. And I really kind of like saw a creator who kind of like matched me. He's a lot more surly than me nowadays. One thing I do like about him is just he doesn't really seem to give a shit. Like he just does what he's going to do. And if you don't like it, fuck off.
I genuinely think he's the best he's ever been. I mean, the book is the best it's ever been. I absolutely love it. It's one of the first things I read every month. It's got loads going on. Every week is a new design and like 300 people on a double page spread. And it's really, really good, man. Really good adult comics. And it's got a lot of heart to it.
For me, like as well, he kind of the Venom, the look of Venom,
right?
Like the big teeth and the tongue, and massive like upper body, and like the slime all going over him. Like he was the kind of, I don't think he gets enough credit for kind of coming up with the look of Venom. And it, for me, Venom is more in the look, and it kind of fleshes itself out. But even the cover work, there's one I pulled up when. Spider-Man gets stripped of his powers and he has to go fight a villain called Tarantula, who's kind of dressed in red and black, and he's got like two spikes on his feet. One injects like a paralyzing poison, the other one's death. And it was just great. Like the, I'm not sure, some of them, I think he took over writing at some point.
But he did. I remember, I think he was a one-man band on Spider-Man for a while, wasn't he, I think?
It really amused me when, to show... I think he had a bit of a thing going on with Peter David. He wasn't a big fan. And he wanted to show how tough Doc Ock was now that he got these new adamantium tentacles. So he just had him fucking up the Hulk over like three pages. Absolutely just like taking the Hulk out. I was like, bloody hell. Like you can take out the Hulk. That's something. Mm-hmm. So I kind of really kind of like all this stuff was really appealing to me, and I saw a lot of myself in him as a creator.
Oh, nice, man. Yeah. I can see the influence, I've got to tell you.
Yeah. It's definitely like there's a lot of like extreme foreshortening and exaggeration that I do like fucking hell. Yeah, take that from him.
Yeah, and he's just doing what he loves. Comics, he genuinely just he's all about,
and he gives
comics.
Loads of chances to people. He always backups in his comics and stuff like that of lesser known, you know, creators. I think 250 had an untold number of extra people involved in it, you know.
That's brilliant.
He's certainly not afraid to defend himself on social media when people try giving him shit as well.
But so, he talks about comics on Twitter.
He's a comic creator.
He talks about comics and what he likes, and when that spinner rack thing comes up,
he replies to that all the time.
He says, I got this, I got that, I didn't get that one, and it's just great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I think he said something like, hey, look, I'm the same as everyone else. We bought all these titles apart from Spider-Woman. That made me laugh that week. I think he said that. Yeah. So it's because I was a geezer. I never bought Spider-Woman. Unless it was the last thing to buy, then I'd buy it, you know. But yeah, yeah.
But I think it used to be that thing that you go down every week and like, oh, there's no new fucking comics. It's like, oh, I'll just get this one.
Yeah.
Because I've read all the rest of them.
Yeah. That's how I got into Master Kung Fu. I thought, I don't like Kung Fu comics. And I'll buy this one because it's the last one left. And oh my God, it's amazing. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Number one fan.
Yeah.
Just because you mentioned Peter David just then, one of the replies we had was from Gorilla Midget. He said he posted a page of X Factor 87.
Oh, I saw that, yeah. And he said, hell.
I enjoyed Peter David's skill in making me see a character I disliked in a new light. And it's, go on to our thread and you'll be able to see it for yourself. But it's a Quicksilver page where there's a lot of dialogue and he's certainly getting some points across, and he's putting together a jigsaw at the same time. And
oh, yeah, I know some.
And it's,
yeah.
It's happening so quickly. And it's just it's just worth seeing that page, because that's a great page in itself, I think. I'm not sure.
Quicksilver, he's there. His whole issue, every single character goes into therapy, and they're talking to...
Doc Samson.
Yeah. And basically, he really humanizes Quicksilver, because at that point, like, Pietro was a real fucking dick. He was like, why is this guy a dick all the time? And he kind of really explains, like, imagine going to like the ATM and the fucking person in front of you can't remember their number. This takes fucking forever. He's like, it's like that for me. Everything. Everyone's really slow. They don't know what the fuck they're doing. And that would wind you up.
Yeah.
If you,
yeah.
Every single interaction was like that. It was, yeah, it's good. When he, Peter David, teamed up on Hulk and he had Dale Keown. Yeah. Oh, fuck me.
That was, Dale Keown that is an amazing. Absolute beast. Who might tie into something we'll talk about in a second as well.
Oh, okay.
One last point now. I got like the Peter David writing book, and there's one bit that stuck out about it when he says, like, when you're trying to talk about an opinion or a point of view in a comic, you'd have your two characters fighting over that opinion. And one thing he references, there's a Supergirl comic, and she's fighting with Steel about how they treat this mass murderer. Like, should he be brought to jail or? And it's one of those classic, the two heroes fight, but they're actually like just banding back philosophies back and forth. Like one believes A, one believes B. And he says, like, as a writer, he says that the thing is for him to present a question or a conundrum to the reader of a moral kind of quandary, not giving you the answer.
Yeah.
So like a lot of comics now say A is right and B is wrong. And if you think B, you're just fucking wrong.
Yeah.
Which, it's, I think it's better to present the facts and then let the reader come to the right decision, which I think 99% of people would go choose the right option. I'd like to think that, but
yeah,
I don't know.
If you get that new, there's a new version of that out, but from Peter David, if you get it, there's a appendix, isn't there, on how to pay your taxes? I think as a writer,
this is what pay them.
Yeah, just pay them. That's all it says. Just pay them.
Yeah. Dear God, just pay them.
Ludology, our pal, he says, yes. Nicholas Scott on Earth 2, kill or be killed by Sean Phillips. Grant Morrison from Arkham Asylum, Serious House on a Serious Earth. Yeah, that's a good book.
I think that's quite interesting that he mentioned kill or be killed by Sean Phillips.
Because
that's one of the more recent ones.
Isn't it? Yeah, yeah. He's a young lad though, Ludology.
he's a babe in the woods.
We can keep learning. And Daft Penguin said Vince's Dread and Ultron prints from Troops 2016 were basically the first indie things I ever bought, and I'm still reading his stuff now. God's sake, I've still got them. For the record, they've only fallen off the wall once. There you go.
Hey,
you go. Yeah,
those interactions with people at fucking cons can last a long time. So treat people right. Treat your readers right.
Yeah,
and treat us right. No.
Be right by us.
Another one, just before we get to Tony, is Kirk Spencer. Said he, Sergeant Rock number 318.
He loves Sergeant Rock, didn't he?
This issue of Sergeant Rock was the first I bought new off the newsstand. It not only helped solidify my War Comics fandom, but started me looking for more work from Joe Kubert.
Kubert, man, we've got to do a Kubert episode one day, especially those War Comics. We don't really talk about them much in the UK, do they? Because they're mostly, our War Comics were very different, weren't they? Because they're really weekly, like Sergeant Hurricane or something like that.
Yeah.
But the those, I had a period 10, 15 years ago buying a load of Sergeant Rock and all those sort of DC mostly war books. And there's a lot of great, amazing storytelling at Kanaga. These sort of people tell some really interesting and quite bleak, dark stories in them, you know? Mm-hmm. Some great stuff there.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I think, have we had a war? Have we talked about war comics?
I'm not sure we have or not. No.
We've been toying with the idea of doing another genre month fairly soon, so war comics might be one of them.
I think that's a good one, yeah.
Right.
Nice one.
That and sex comics.
Yeah, well that's not necessarily a genre. That's going to be a whole show by itself.
That's just going to be a video.
Yeah. Oh, it's a stream.
Mine's a guy I've never met, actually, and I feel sad that I never met him. I saw him from a distance, but never got to speak to him, so it's Len Wein. As a kid, I was, my father, anyone knows, I used to live in West London, my father was in the forces, so he wasn't always at home, but I had a subscription at the newsagents in Greenford for Mighty World of Marvel, which was mostly at the time a Hulk-led comic. Whenever he'd come home, he'd be the one to go and collect it with a newspaper and bring home sort of a little stack of Mighty World of Marvels for me, and this one really stuck in my mind. It's written by Len Wein, it's got art by Herb Trimp, who I'm still a fan of, I still think he's amazing. And I mean, as an adult now, I remember that it's a riff on the Defiant Ones. Did you know that Tony Curtis, Sidney Poitier movie from the 50s where they escape and they're chained together, and there's a lot about, you know, being a prisoner and race relations, and it's an interesting movie, and I had not seen it at the time, but it's Incredible Hulk 182, which is the one after the appearance of Wolverine. So it's actually the third appearance of Wolverine right at the start of it.
Right.
And but it's not really what it's about. It's the Hulk has this sort of confrontation with the Canadian government and the special forces and Wolverine, and he defeats them, and he jumps off into the middle of Canada, I think it is, or North America, North US. And he comes across a hobo called Cracker Jack. I think it's Cracker Jack Jackson, I think his name is. Yeah, who's sitting there playing a harmonica. And I think as a kid, I think it's changed now, but the purpose of the Hulk was kind of, he was childlike, wasn't it? He was the easy connection for the younger reader. He was a man of, you know, a creature of extreme emotion, and we kind of connected a little bit to him.
He was Hulk Smash.
That's what he was, wasn't he? And you know, and they were always after him, and he was sort of jumping about across America and wherever, and it was kind of a monster of the week. Maybe every couple of months there was a monster, you know, or Valkyrie or someone like that.
Yeah,
Adam Warlock, you know, the Cobalt Man. There were some really great creatures involved in it, and in this one, I mean, I'd been reading Mighty World of Marvel for quite a long time at the time. And I thought, oh, wow, you know, Wolverine, I thought he was cool and stuff like that. But nothing connected me on a personal level like this issue did. And so he meets this hobo, and this hobo is, he's this sort of black guy, and he's sitting there and he's making beans, and he gives some to the Hulk, which turns up as a joke again in Defenders. Hulk loves beans is that famous panel, isn't it? They become friends, and it's this real moment. And there's obviously a little bit of Mice and Men connected to it as well, and you can see where the influences are bleeding into it. But it's a comic that's done with a lot of heart and a lot of it's about a relationship, and it's not just about him smashing another monster, two-headed monster, or whatever it's going to be in the face. It resonated with me as a kid. And meanwhile, the Hulk is having this moment, and he's going fishing with his hobo friend, and they're sitting there fishing with fishing rods and stuff. Meanwhile, Johnny Anvil and Hammer Jackson have escaped the local jail, and they are chained together in the same way that Sidney Poitier and Tony Curtis were chained together in Defiant Ones. And they're running away, and they're being chased by dogs, and they come across, of course they do, they come across a crashed alien, you know, with a big head that looks like a turnip, who they shoot him with the gun they've stolen off one of the guards, and the lead from the gun goes in this alien's body and refreshes him. He says, oh, thank you, you've saved me. Yeah, obviously. And he rewards them by making their chain this special metal, this special weapon, and gives them sort of super strength. And of course, we now know that they will go up against the Hulk at some point. And you think, okay, well, we're back into this. And don't remember, this was split up over four comics, this story, because in the weekly format, it was split up, you know, so I was reading it in black and white. And so he goes up, they obviously come across the Hulk, they go up against each other, and as part of it, you realise that Hammer Jackson is Crackerjack Jackson's son. And he kills him. And as a kid, I think, fucking hell, he just killed his dad. That's like something.
Yeah.
You know? And the Hulk beats them, rips their special weapon apart, and then gets chased off. And he takes, and he shouts, "You killed Hulk's friend." And I remember thinking, this is not what I'm used to. This is not the comics I'm used to somehow. It was, there was something gentle and purposeful about the way Hulk treats this stranger, this man he's never met, and they're both outsiders. And I thought, this is pretty good. I like this. This is interesting. And Hulk sort of jumps off, takes the body, and he buries him, and he makes a headstone out of some rocks he smashes. And the geezer has shown him how to write Hulk in the sand, so he wrote Cracker Jack Jackson on this headstone. And it doesn't totally make sense. It's a bit wackadoodle. And I remember just the bit where he's teaching the Hulk how to eat with a fork, and the Hulk just bites off the head of the fork with the beans and swallows it, and bits like that. They just stuck with me. I don't know why. It's and at the time, and I didn't have any concept of who the writer was and who the artist was when I was a little kid in West London reading these comics. And I sort of, and it's only later that, you know, with the birth of podcasts and YouTube and conventions and stuff, you see these people talking. And I've since listened to a lot. I know, sadly, he's passed away. He passed away in 2017, Len Wein. And he was an absolute giant. And there was another one of these guys, a bit like Grimwald, a bit like these guys. Nobody says a bad thing about them because they were so... Not only was he an amazing writer, and you've got to remember he created Swamp Thing. He, along with Dave Cockrum, he created the all new X-Men. He did Justice League, Batman. He revived the Blue Beetle, you know, and then he went off to work in animated shows before returning to comics. But he was a guy who loved comics. As a kid, him and Marv Wolfman were best friends. And every week, literally every week, they would go and take, because I think they lived in Long Island at the time, every week they would go and take the DC Comics tour. Every week. You imagine the tour guide must go, "Oh, these fucking idiots are back again." And then, of course, as an older kid, I listened to his podcast and I listened to him being interviewed. And he did do a lot of stuff. He was quite a bon viveur. He was quite a party host. He was, you know, he put that 70s, you know, anti-violence, right, you know, the fact that, you know, a Green Hulk can get on with a black hobo kind of, you know, thing going on. It was... really interesting. I think it stuck with me. I genuinely think his the way the emotion and the sensitivity and the hurt and the sadness of that story stay with me for what I write now and what I read now, what I enjoy reading now. I would love to have met him. I heard an anecdote. I was listening to a podcast in preparation today, listening to him talk about his creation of Swamp Thing, and they created Swamp Thing in I think House of Secrets, off the top of my head, House of Mystery, one of the two, and issue 92. And Carmine Infantino called him back in and said, "Look, this is the biggest seller this month, even bigger than Superman. We're going to do a series." And he says, "Well, I don't think it deserves a series, man. I think it just works on its own." And I thought, yeah, he's a class act, you know? And then he let Alan, and then when eventually he decided, like, "I'm going to do it this way, do it my way," and he came back and wrote it a number of years later. And then Alan Moore took it over, and he was the editor of Alan Moore on it. And he said, Alan and I chatted a lot about how we would go about it. And I thought, yeah, I dig that guy. And the one thing that really got me on side with him, he said, I think the interviewer said, "Well, do you still read Swamp Thing?" And he says, "I read Swamp Thing for many years after I worked on that book, and many years after Alan Moore worked on it, and I don't think it was ever better than then." And I thought, there's a guy who goes and buys comics and reads them. And I like that. I like that about him. Yeah. Yeah. If you can find there's loads of podcasts, loads of interviews, but if you just put Len Wein into the podcatcher of your choice, you'll find there's some really nice ones. He's such a, he can really tell a story. He's really interesting when he talks. Unlike me talking about
you
it.
You know,
there
you go. One thing that kind of like made me think there, this, if you say to someone, "Oh, like, oh, can you write comics?" And if you sort of said, "Well, no experience writing comics, I don't really read them," people will be like, "Oh, yeah, you can give it a go, be all right." But if you imagine tried that with any other media, you said, "I want to give, I'm going to write a film. I don't like film. I don't watch films.
I'm going to write a song."
People would say, "You're fucking mad. What are you doing?" Yeah. You'd never get hired.
It's true, man.
I don't know why people are giving a pass for comics, because it's a fucking talent and a skill. And
it is. Yeah. Describing the action between panels is not like writing a paragraph in a book.
And it's not... Yeah. It's not for screenwriters.
No, it's not. No.
Comics you is can not screenwriting.
You can learn it. Yeah, and I don't see why you shouldn't.
The transferable skills, but don't think, "Oh, I didn't make it as a screenplay, let's make it into a comic." I don't think that should be the way you go about it. Anyway,
truer words have never been spoken.
Yeah.
Right. So that's my one, Len Wein.
Nice one, Tony.
Yeah, a very good one. A book that I recommend. If you can dig it, it's on Comixology. It's on the Marvel app. Incredible Hulk 182. It's quite a book. Yeah.
There you go. Just a couple more from the Twitters. Martin Simmons, he said, Dave McKean's work on Violent Cases.
Okay.
At the same time, I discovered that he was also on covers for Hellblazer and Sandman.
Yeah.
The owner of my local comic shop, Comic Zone in Reading, often got McKean along for signings. Bloody hell.
Oh, man.
Nice. He even exhibited some of his original Hellblazer covers. Bloody hell.
Yes. That sounds like a comic shop.
Yeah, what's Dave McKean doing now?
He just done Black Dogs a few years ago now, isn't it? He must have done something I'm not aware of. There you go.
Yeah. James Gibbs.
Gibster.
The Gibster.
I miss the Gibster.
Yes, we miss the Gibster. I don't know why I sang that. But his one is quite prevalent. That's going to tie in, so this is going to be a segue and a half. Greg Smallwood on Moon Knight, number one from 2016. That was a book that he actually sold me on as well, and that's a bloody great book.
I bought you that book.
Yeah. Yes. Yes, you did, didn't you? Because that was...
Yeah.
That was
that London Super Comic Con?
That was London Super Comic Con. Yeah, I remember reading it on the bus.
The first one we did.
Yes. That was great, that was.
That was a great weekend.
Yeah, and Greg Smallwood is a bloody brilliant artist.
His Punisher covers are the best thing about that book that Marvel just did. They're fucking amazing.
Yeah, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely stunning. Rick Leonardi, Spider-Man 2099.
Yes.
Yes, I agree. I think he's a great artist, and I think there's a certain person who can't draw feet who slags him off unnecessarily. Yeah.
Really? Oh, interesting.
I wasn't that blown away when I first read Spider-Man 2099, but when I kept going back to it, and I was like, I actually really like this, and yeah, I really like it. You know, because I was kind of a bit like a Spider-Man purist. It's not fucking Peter Parker. He's not wearing a costume. Blah, 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 blah. But then, yeah, I went back to it time and again, really enjoyed it.
It's a nice design, isn't it? It's held its own for a few years now, isn't it? A lot of people are very fond of that design, aren't they? Yeah.
He also said Jim Lee's cover to Wolverine 27 immediately made him a fan.
What one's that?
I've just looked it up. It is a cover of Wolverine without mask, and he's sort of launching through the air.
Oh, I know the one.
With his fists out. Very, very simple, but absolutely iconic.
I
think we can actually agree. And here's the segue, because we're going to talk about Jim Lee now, because Jim Lee is definitely one for me. He's one of the pillars in my comics reading. And obviously there's the X-Men number one, blah, blah, blah. But for me, it was his time on Uncanny. I think I've talked about when Rogue was in the Savage Lands, but I honestly think it's the issue Wolverine, Black Widow and Captain America. That's
fucking great.
That is one of the great comic books for me. That singular issue is one of the great comic books. And looking back on it now, and who was it who posted up something of Jim Lee's artwork recently? Oh God, apologies.
Michael Russell did he's done a coloring video of Jim Lee did a double page spread of like the X-Men in one of those swimsuit issues and they're all by the pool, and he's like, you can watch a video of him colouring it from scratch, and it's fucking amazing.
Damien from Art92, he posted up a page of Jim Lee's artwork from the X-Men, and this was one of the things, actually, shout out to you, Damien, because this got us thinking about, God, you remember those days when you just used to just see something and immediately become a fan of it? He posted up some pages of interior stuff from Jim Lee, and it's just stunning. You can clearly read it. There's detail, but it's pared back. You know, sometimes there's no backgrounds and you just concentrate on it. It's an amazing action sequence where Wolverine and Havoc are having a fight, and I've forgotten where that... But I did think to myself, I need to find out when that arc is and try and get a trade of it or something.
Oh, I'm not
like
sure.
That.
Yeah.
Did Jim Lee sort of seem to hit the ground running and then just didn't stop? But he was like going at such a speed that he didn't really change for me for the better or worse.
He only changed for me when he had that. He kind of aped Miller for one thing, didn't he?
Yeah, he did Deathblow.
That's it. Yeah.
It wasn't really kind of... It didn't really work for me.
Yeah, I wasn't feeling that one.
No.
Yeah.
And Jim Lee is obviously... He's awesome. He's one of the greats, especially, and he's influenced how many people like drawing comics or making comics because of him. So, you know, he's doing the Lord's work, but he's someone definitely now who puts, you see some of his pencils and unbelievably detailed. These are, you know, you see his pencils and you just think, my God, they're beautiful and they make you want to weep. But there is another side to that coin. And we were, before this, earlier on today, we were talking on the WhatsApp and we were talking about, I mean, Tony brought it up, detail in comic book artwork.
Yeah. It's a weird one, isn't it? And I think we are so entrenched and so under the water in relation to what we see on a page and how we appreciate it.
Yeah.
That it's difficult. I think there's some artists out there that we freak about who, if you gave it to a new reader, it would be, it's a weird thing to say overcomplicated, but it would almost be too much for the eye.
Mm-hmm.
So there's some, I'm just sort of searching to think who I mean, but there's Daniel Warren Johnson, for example. We absolutely love him, and technically and emotionally, and he knows movement and action, and you know, there's everything he does is right. And he is, you know, an artist almost, I would say, at this point. But if you gave it to a 12-year-old, would he go, what? I don't know. I think this is why manga does so well. I think because it simplifies an image. It's user-friendly to newcomers. Mm. And I think, I don't want to do Warren Johnson, because I think an intelligent kid would get it. I think my son certainly, he loved Murder Falcon, or whatever it was. My son loved that, and he thought it was brilliant. Yeah. And he's a reasonably new reader.
And I think also Warren Johnson does this thing of sometimes there's a lot of speed lines. There's a lot of that where there's not loads of detail in the background. There's so much kinetic artwork. But sometimes some artists with scenes, it's beautiful artwork, and you look at the original pages, it's stunning. You just want them. But there's, for instance, if there's a fight scene, you know, you're seeing all of the details in the background. You're seeing, like, the knuckles connecting with faces. You're seeing everything. And it's almost an onslaught to the brain, isn't it? Like, you know.
There's a language. There's a language to comics that you have to learn almost. I'm not saying, like, studiously learn, but you kind of have to get acquainted with it. I think another example might be Kirby, actually. I think if I gave Kirby to a, you know, my 12-year-old nephew, he'd go, what's that? There's a lot of artists out there who I didn't get first time. For example, Carmine Infantino, I didn't get him first time, probably my own stupidity. But I suddenly look at it and I think, right, I get it now. And then I become absolutely in love with it. And I think sometimes we need to educate our palate a little bit, do we? I don't know.
I agree.
It's a funny one, isn't it?
I think definitely knowing who your audience is for, do you know what I mean? You know, there were people saying, the gatekeepers of comics, of which there are people who are trying to do that, fucking idiots.
Yeah.
This book isn't for kids. And then, at the same time, you've got to be like, look, comics should be at some point, you know, unless it's, I'm not going to give someone a book about
gratuitous.
Fucking,
yeah.
Kid, most of the time, kids or teenagers should be able to pick up comics and find joy in them. If they don't find joy, you know, if it doesn't hit them. We're talking about these things because we pick them up and then all of a sudden, bam, it hit us. These, Jim Lee pages that I'm talking about, wonderful detail on the characters, but there's a simplicity to the background.
Yeah.
You know.
And it's, when you take this the next step further, which is kind of where I was thinking about it, I texted you guys like a long fucking ramble at night, like a mad person earlier. But the is from a sales point of view, and do we need to be that flash? I always think the big example of it is when I was trying to talk people into reading Valiant for all those years, the one I would always get them is the Valiant, because it's clean, crisp visuals. Yeah. It's not overcomplicated with loads of characters.
Yeah.
You don't have to learn loads of stuff to enjoy it. And I think from a visual and from a storytelling writing point of view, I think maybe we need to think about that a bit more these days. And I think that maybe is why it becomes something of a closed shop, is not only the visuals but the complicated storylines.
Yeah,
I think you can't drop someone. I would never buy issue one of Empire as someone's first comic, because they go, what the fuck is this all about?
One creator, one title, one franchise, which we can call it that, which I'm surprised wasn't brought up. But at the same time, I think it's an interesting one to talk about, is Mignola and the Hellboy verse. Because that is, you know, there's lots of detail. It's not absolutely drowning in detail, but also the characters, it's not drowning in complications as well. Yeah. Yes, they bought
especially the Hellboy issue. I would say BPRD a little bit, but yeah. I think Hellboy certainly is like a kind of monster of the week occasionally. Yeah. You know, so you don't need to be. Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
But BPRD had that Hellboy was around for a while before it had built up this universe that then bled into the BPRD. And there is like an efficiency of storytelling. Not necessarily. Sometimes we talk about that with art, but storytelling there has to be an efficiency. Sometimes you know, there's a shorthand. Comics are necessary. They are a shorthand. Don't take five panels to show what could be one panel. You know, and it's the same with artwork. It's the same with storytelling. And I think you're absolutely right to bring it up that sometimes, dare I say it, we get lost in the art of comics.
Yeah, I don't want it to go away because I like, do you know what I mean? No. Most of my days are spent wanking over beautiful comic art. But sometimes I think
it's not wrong.
And I was trying to think who would be my go to if I was going to recreate something, you know, that was clean, crisp, easy to read for a newcomer. I was trying to think who the artist was, and the main one I came up with was Sal Buscema. And I think if you go back to some of those Sal Buscema Spider-Man issues, they're an entry drug immediately for anyone reading it.
Yeah.
There's an ongoing story that you can get involved in, but the visuals are very clear. The visuals are very easy to read. You don't need to be an expert in comics to follow complicated panel structures and stuff like that. I was trying to think of someone. I wanted you guys to see if you could think of anyone who would be similar, you know?
I would say, well, off the top of my head, Chris Samnee, I think, is a good...
Yeah, good shout. Yeah.
I think that's... obviously, there is a certain amount of detail to it, but not... you know, the important thing is what the people are doing, what the people are saying, the emotion. I mean, anyone who's seen Firepower knows that, you know, it's a character piece.
He includes what he needs to include, doesn't he? And he does it so well.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people. I heard Tom Arisa say there's a clean line between Toth and Samnee, and I can see that.
Yeah. There's also the classic Darwin Cook. How many people has he influenced? He did a lot of quite dark stuff. You know, like the Parker books and stuff. But you know,
how very readable and an easy entry drug to give someone who doesn't read comics.
Yeah.
Another one, the Parker books would be an easy one. So you don't read. Oh, I have a read of this.
Yeah.
Involving. You know, you don't need to know. It's neither visually or storyline complicated.
Yeah. And this is, you know, these are for, like, we're talking about the more meat and potatoes, sort of like less animated styles. You have, like, the characters, you know, creators like Jeff Smith, etc. You know, they're doing...
I was trying to stay away from that and Stan Sakai and stuff. I was thinking more superhero comics. But, they're obvious go-tos, aren't they?
Yeah, they're the obvious go-tos. They have, like, they go beyond... They go beyond the barriers of the superhero and stuff. I don't know, but I think,
What about you, Dan?
Yeah,
well, you think stuff like Frank Miller's original Sin City, you could pretty much give that to anyone, and there's such an economy of story. You know, in reason, there's such an economy of artwork and story.
Yeah, I find look at this. You're 8 years old, but look at when he sits in that electric chair.
look at those nipples.
But like, if he was going to be like a non-comic reader. An adult, you could get
I think
into it.
Steve Dillon's the same for me. I think Steve Dillon's in his Hellblazer and Preacher work and his Punisher stuff. I think that's a good one.
The way I approach it is like kind of an artist who does his own pages and creates stuff. It's kind of using the time and what I've got to kind of tell the story but not half-ass the art. So like I can spend 10 hours on a page, for instance, and it's read in 30 seconds. But if I spend 3 hours on a page and it gets read in 30 seconds and there's absolutely no difference, I've got to go for the latter.
Yeah, so, maybe that's where manga's got it right. That's what I was thinking. You know,
Like,
I mean, as much as I love Brendan McCarthy, my first comic that I would give to someone would not be a Brendan McCarthy Dread. You know, because it's like, what the fuck is that? Is this geezer on acid or something? You know, I say, like, well, yeah, but I love it. And he's like, oh, okay, you know.
Yeah. But we can't necessarily, at the same time, we can't necessarily say. You know, what will be the gateway drug for a lot of people, for instance?
Yeah, it really depends about your eye, what your eye is used to.
Part of you might say, Simon Bisley's Slane artwork. Kids aren't necessarily going to get that, are they? But they probably absolutely loved it.
It depends. They might have had an education on video games, so they might understand that sort of, you know, what kids are exposed to these days.
Or album covers and things like that, do you know what I mean?
There's
that sort of all
the manga readership's so much higher nowadays as well. I mean, we're kind of like American superhero comics are kind of on the arse sales-wise compared to manga stuff. And it seems to be a lot more the youth picking the stuff up. And I've looked, I don't know about you guys, to the manga titles. And it's like, what the fuck? There's like just loads of them.
Yeah.
Loads and loads and loads.
Yeah.
I mean, we mentioned about doing an episode, but I'm so pig ignorant on the subject.
Me too, man. Yeah. Me too.
I wouldn't even know where to start.
So. Yeah. The problem is, if you want to learn about manga, everything's about fucking 300 volumes long. So you're going to spend a year reading that. And, you know, it's like.
We're going to get, like we do every time we mention it, we're going to get a list of. You don't need to read that. Just read this one. But yeah, we are going
to. I don't want to sound condescending with that suggestion, and it's not meant like that. It was just kind of a moment where I was thinking, how do we get kids back into comics?
Hmm.
And I think certain art styles suit it and certain art styles don't. Certain art styles are right for that, and certain art styles are right for something else.
Because you know, we are constantly sharing artwork that's like, Jesus, have you seen this?
Yeah. Yeah.
The amount of detail, because you know, we love detail. I mean,
you put that God Machine picture on the Twitter, on the WhatsApp this week. God Machine's brilliant. I love that geezer.
He's an absolute beast.
I interviewed him at Cardiff, and he is a fucking genius.
Yeah.
I've got to tell you.
Yeah.
Love
he's
him.
A top bloke. But for instance, I am a huge fan of Brett Booth, and there's some Brett Booth pieces of artwork flying about at the moment that are his pencils. He's done some X-Men stuff that's like, Jesus fuck, get him on that book now. Get him. But at the same time, it's super detailed. It's almost, you know, that's just talking. That's what I want to see. You know,
I'll tell you why I love that geezer. When my son was a kid, we would a little exercise on a Saturday. We'd read a comic, and I'd get him to write 100 words about it. And I sent it to Booth, and he wrote the loveliest email back.
Oh,
brilliant! So that's nice.
Dude, as far as I'm concerned, he's a dude.
Still got his email. We need to get him on. Anyway, and that's how we get our guests. We spent years cultivating our list,
literally grooming them.
But we'll keep this thread going, like obviously in a Facebook post and stuff, because it is revisiting that joy of like when you discovered a creator and that wonderful nostalgia and, you know, just comic book artwork and what we talked about just then. What are your opinions on it? Because, you know, I mean,
here's an example. Maybe people can follow this is maybe an artist that at first you didn't get because you weren't used to it or you were younger, and then suddenly you discovered. And for me, it was the move between Ballard and Ellie and Mike McMahon on Slain. And I was used to Ballard and Ellie, and he's, you know, they're not simplistic visuals, but they're, you know, they're perhaps easier to read visually. And then he moved on to, you know, wherever it was, Sky Chariots, wherever it was, he did in Mike McMahon. And I didn't get it for years. And I thought, I wish they'd go back to Ballard
the
and Ellie.
The one that took me a couple of issues to get used to it. Where's Walking Dead when it went from Tony Moore to Charlie Adler?
Okay,
I remember because that was such a big sea change in terms of style. I was like, "What? Yeah. Oh, he's not
now
doing
it." Now we barely
it.
Remember who was on it, don't we? Really?
Yeah.
You know, visually in our brains,
and co-created it. Adler, it. Let's not forget he co-created it.
Yeah.
I really, no disrespect to Adler, I much prefer the artwork of the original stuff.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
I love Tony Moore's stuff. I've got a zombie T-shirt of it. Yeah. Great stuff. Back. And this was as I thought it would be, a nice fun chat. Grumpy old man just going, I remember the comments.
We didn't get too negative.
Nah,
I mean,
a lot of love there, babes.
So just think about the comics you loved and put them up. We'll put, obviously, when we post this thread find the thread on Twitter and add to it. But yeah, just find out those. And I tell you what, if you think about that comic that you loved, right? Find it somewhere. Find it in your like the comics that you have, your long box or your graphic novel shelves or whatever. Or perhaps you don't have it. Perhaps you just get it digitally. Perhaps find it on eBay. Get a copy of it, because I tell you this much: reading it will be joy. If you just want to feel good, find that book that you're thinking of right now. Find it, pick it up now, and have a look through it. And it'll
I dug out my copy of Time Beavers today.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And he sent us a page that looked a lot like us.
Weirdly,
yeah. So, we're going to do a whole episode about Time Beavers. yes. So that was us. And we, add your voice to the call, of course. Not to the call. We're not going to do a call-in show. Jesus Christ.
Oh, my God.
That's too much work.
We sort of did that.
Yeah, we got voice clips, didn't we, that time?
Oh,
remember?
Yeah, bloody hell, yeah. That was
we had those ones where people are waiting on the line and they jumped in.
Oh, that one. Oh, that was 250th. Yeah, where we kept hilariously cutting them off.
Yeah. Oh, God, yeah. Oh, I love being a bastard. So this was a lot of fun. But what shout outs have we got this week, gents?
I've got a couple.
Go for it.
So I accidentally bumped into Paul Dunn, Man Read Comic and the Comic Crush website yesterday in town, and he was with a listener, Rebecca, who is Arbitrary Genius on Twitter. A lady who we read a lot of comics. We had a good comic chat. It was great. And Paul just sat there while I took the piss out of him, which he doesn't mind. But it was a good little coffee I had with them. And the other one is go listen to Pat Mills, or go watch the YouTube video of Pat Mills on Kayfabe. I've just finished watching it, and it made me grin throughout the whole thing. You want a man in full of enthusiasm about comics? Go watch that. It's posted it in the Facebook group. Actually,
you can find
it.
He dropped a teaser like about a 2000 AD memo, and I'm going to watch it. Like,
yeah,
really want to see what that memo
is. He reads it out. Yeah, I think you can see it on the screen in the YouTube as well. Yeah, it's good.
Brilliant. I've got that lined up for tomorrow.
Good stuff, man. Yeah, they're my two.
Nice.
Guests from last week, Chris and Jay. Yeah. Knights versus Pirates, absolutely fucking going crazy on that. That's on Kickstarter. Back it now. You hashtag Team Knight or Team Pirate. Go check it out. It's amazing. They released a whole new set of pages, original art pages, which you can do the tier and own. So
I got a page of Chris's, and it's class. I've got to tell you, yeah, the work on that page.
The Scroll Lords is still going strong. I upped my pledge from. I did have digital, and I thought, no, I want this printed. So go check that out on Kickstarter as well.
I've got a couple. So Kickstarter. So the Penguin Coincidence.
Real.
Go back that. That's good. And Jimmy Palmiotti and Dave Johnson's Pop Kill issue 2, an adult comic book. I reviewed the first issue a while ago. I don't think they really need us, to be fair, because it had a 23 grand in pounds total. It's now at 36 grand. So I think they're doing all right. They're doing all right without us. Maybe we can help them out a little bit. Do you know what I mean? But now that Dave's obviously best friends with us. Go back that one.
Yeah.
Everything that helps.
A lot of the ones we're talking about have already succeeded in their goals. But
it just seems to be the nature of Kickstarter at the moment.
Yeah. It's doing really well.
But you really should check them out. For instance, I've got a couple more. By Man and Angels, which is Jen Yilblad's Kickstarter.
Oh, yeah.
3 days to go. Well, probably 2 days, actually. Smashed its target. It's issue 3. It's a sci-fi fairy tale comic. Jen's video is always hilarious. Anyway, she's hilarious. So go pledge that, and we'll probably get her on the episode when we want to talk about smut.
Yes.
So look forward to that, because that is going to be chaos. And
oh my god, the last one went off the rails.
Yeah.
Surprised we didn't get thrown off fucking Apple Podcast for that one.
Yep. And another Kickstarter is Robin Volume 1. From Simon Burks and crew, the legendary outlaw with attitude joined the Sherwood Forest legend on her thrilling adventure. No one above another, and there's loads of. It looks like a great little book, actually. This one, have you seen this one? Like a new take on
that? No, I haven't. No,
Robin Hood. It's quite good. I'll put a link in the show notes, and you can check it out. That's got 18 days to go. So there you go. I've backed that as well, because that looks pretty cool. So there you go. It's almost becoming Kickstarter corner.
What have you just sent, Dan?
I saw Dan's news story.
A clip from a news story. Drunk whacked penis on woman's car, then did poo in the street as they sat and ate chips. That's a day and a half, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The women were enjoying a day out in red car when John Henson, 44, began his bizarre campaign of lewd behaviour.
Do you see, folks, what I have to put up with?
I'd read that comic.
I mean, other people would edit this out.
We're leaving it in.
We'll just leave it in. Why not?
Can I, with our recommends, I've got one that you two have read, and it's relatively old news, but I read it yesterday and I fucking love it.
All right. Well, with that, what a segue, because what are we going to recommend to our lovely listeners this week? Dan, take it away.
I've got, I read Volume 1, Prelude of Firepower by Robert Kirkman and Chris Sandley. It's just fucking. Some comics, like, I read a bit and I'll grab a coffee and then come back, or I'll leave a bit and come back. This just blasted through one read. Yeah. It was just
so
effortless.
Good.
The only bad thing about it was that it ended.
And it's just started again, though.
It's had a free comic book day zero issue.
Yeah.
It's had issue 1 and 2 are out now.
Oh, two issues out.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
You need to get on that before it sells out, I reckon. Mm.
The chap, I can't remember what his name, Owen, turns up at this kind of mystical kind of martial arts monastery, and he's like a Western guy, and there's a kind of a mix of people there learning, and he goes through this kind of tuition of learning martial arts, and he's already an absolute fantastic martial artist as it is. But Kirkman manages to step around and reinvent like tropes you would instantly think this would go to. And
yeah, this makes very Kunlun, so well. Isn't it? You know,
yeah, very Kunlun.
But it's still entertaining. You managed to do that without, you know, we're going, oh, this is Kunlun again. I never thought that as I was reading
No. And kind of, I was worried, you know, that Western savior trope of like, he's like, they're practicing this Eastern martial art, and it's not till this guy from the West turned up that he really, you don't get that at all. It's just really well crafted. As with all the Kirkman stuff that I've read, I absolutely love it. And like this is just straight on board straight away. Mm. And there's a massive jump at the end where you leave this initial prologue and it does a big jump and you're like, oh, fuck. And it sets up the series to go from there.
Yeah.
I can't recommend it highly enough.
I mean, it's great, man. You know, obviously Kirkman hit the big bucks with The Walking Dead and stuff. But one thing I always love about him is he just comes back to comics and he wants to make comics. And like, you know, he's not coasting on that Walking Dead money. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
he wants to create.
He's got
new stuff
he's like got this. A big hitter, and he's clearly. I mean, I can't imagine Samney's the cheapest artist in the world to hire.
No,
you know, and rightly so. But and he's got Samney on a book. That's a dream. That's a dream artist. Yeah. You know, I'd love to use him on a book. Yeah. You know,
but then again, there's also that thing that can be said. Like, for instance, when an artist gets called up by a big hitter writer, they're going to be like, not only is this going to be good because I'm going to own a certain part of it, but this is going to be under so many noses. It's going to be like, you know, everyone's going to have their eyes on this in some way, shape or form. It was same when Mark Miller did it. He did a whole load of different series, didn't he, with different artists. There was like Greg Capullo, Raphael Albuquerque.
Duncan Fegredo.
And it was probably, and it was the same deal, wasn't it, really? The artists were like they were collaborators rather than just an artist for hire. And that's what Firepower's like, that, isn't it? It's as much Samney's world and creation. It's
Kirkman's.
It's fucking stunning.
I'd watch a fucking TV series of that one as well.
Yeah.
Man. I can only hope that it's better than the Iron Fist nonsense.
Yeah.
Tony rarely asks for TV series for comic
books.
Yeah,
I don't, do I?
So that says a lot about it.
You do have a problem if you're doing like a martial art centric hero and then the main actor doesn't know martial arts.
Looks like a stumbling he's doing point. Boy band dancing.
Kind of need to know shit on that. like me and Tom Curry have been messaging back and forth because he's been reading Invincible through for the first time.
He's
been fucking loving it, and I've been retroactively kind of enjoying it through him enjoying it. And he sort of made the observation, what happens if this happens? And I said, well, you have to carry on reading. And then like a day or so later, he said, oh shit, yeah, look, it did happen. He showed me the page of what the question that he asked, like, what happens if the story went this way? And it did explore that. And it was really, really interesting.
And you know, we haven't mentioned. Oh, sorry, I let you finish that, mate.
Go on, guys, go on.
Sorry.
That's right.
We haven't mentioned the 21st Drink and Draw.
Yes, of course.
So that'll be before the next episode, wouldn't it?
That's Friday.
So the 21st on Friday night between 7:30 till 10, we've got another Drink and Draw. And the last two have been fucking brilliant fun. I really enjoyed the last two. So come along and Tom hosts it on his Zoom. Yeah. And if you go to the Facebook page, the link will be there. And we'll probably stick it up on the Twitter as well.
Yeah, if you want to find out, or at this Chucklehead, to find out details about how you can join in as well.
We might have to do a couple of rooms this time because there were so many people.
Yeah, it's good stuff last time, man. It really was, wasn't it? Really enjoyed it. Yeah.
And Tom's got Skelly Bob, which is his webcomic, which he's added animated bits to, which work really, really well. So definitely check that out. And we've got a bit of money for mentioning it.
Yeah.
anyway, Tony, do you want to go next?
Okay, so mine is Thunders, Gareth Hopkins, A5 full color, only 10 printed. I got a postcard. You get a postcard along with it for those lucky people who bought it. And it's the front of the postcard is Romantic Hawaii, a picture of Hawaii, the sea. Now, I thought that was a nice touch. And it's Tony. Thunders can only be read by you, me, and the other 9 people who got a copy. Eventually, it'll be shared wider, but for the moment, it's private. And also mostly true, Gareth. And there's a picture of that sort of robot skull-headed creature and an alien spaceship above him.
Well, it's not private now, is it? You're about to...
No, I've read it out loud. Mm. Yeah, sorry about that. So it's nice that it's on a romantic Hawaii postcard. I found that quite touching. Now, firstly, mine is a completely original issue as well, version of it, because my postman, the knucklehead, left it out in the big storm we had the other day. And I sent you a picture on the WhatsApp, didn't I, of my copy, which the colour has bled through onto the white of the inside back cover and throughout it. And it's become this sort of strange beast that I took great care in drying out, and you can read fine, but it's got a sort of bleed through from the multicoloured on the pages. So, Gareth, it's abstract once again, very colourful abstract, done once again in panels with word panels over the top of them. He uses the captions to create a mood and a rhythm, as always, with really interesting style. He repeats phrases, which I'll talk about in a minute. He mixes in the everyday. So, for example, he talks about a haircut he had. A Zoom call. He had a haircut for a Zoom call, and then realized everyone else has turned their cameras off. His family went away to visit some friends, I think, and he slept with the bathroom light on. So there's the banality of the everyday and stuff, you know, the thought of the moment that he's used to great style in previous books, where, you know, the little thoughts we have as we wander around, we don't write them down, and there's a poetry to them sometimes. Mm. Something occurs to you and then it disappears again, doesn't it? And he uses that. And he mixes in with that some sort of spooky little moments, like taps at the window and walking across a field as it gets dark. And he has a haunting use of phrases in it. So he can phrase like, "I'm in another room from the now nebula," and "cataplectic calm is imposed over." And there's an abstract, but an emphasis in the words sometimes. They play on your mind a bit. And it's a book that I read a couple of times, and I found it really interesting. He uses the panel layouts. Some of them have words in them, some of them do not. And there's some multiple panels in them, and some that overlay between panels, which I think is a really interesting use of it. Underneath some of the images are little hidden words, little hidden phrases. I'm not sure how much of that can be seen and how much of it can't be, because mine's sort of sodden with rain, which gives it this sort of extra element to it. It's original. We love his stuff, don't we? We're fans of his stuff because it is so original, because it's not what we see in comics. And he does abstract art, but there's never a snobbery with Gareth around it, is there? There's never oh, look at me, I'm an abstract artist. There's a great love of comics, regular and all kinds of comics by Gareth, which I kind of hope that we also have. The cover is, I really love the cover, actually. He had a couple of books come out, and there was only 10 copies of each, and I plumped for this one. And it's a field, and you can just make out in the field of some kind of crops, the sort of lines of a tractor or somebody's walked across it. You can see the path, which is something he describes in the verbals in the book as well. The field is rung by dark looking trees and bushes and stuff, and above in the blue sky you get the sun shining through, and he's drawn upon this photograph, so it's almost like the sun is shining through the ozone layer, if you see what I mean, and it's making ripples and lines. But as part of that, there's a pyramid shape that grows up from above the trees and dissects the ozone lined emphasis at the top of the page, and it looks like there's a sort of pyramid, and there's a spookiness to that pyramid. There's a sort of otherworldly UFO effect, it feels to me like, it on it. It's quite impressive, and written underneath through the line of trees is Thunders, and his name is written on the top of the crops. It's just lovely. I just love this stuff. I like to think that we're lucky to have him in the small press. We're lucky to have these little moments that we kind of collect, and the wider comics community don't see them. And the fact there's only 9 of these or 10 of these, mine's number 9 of 10, is I'm pleased I've got it. And I put all his stuff, I back and board his stuff and stick it on a shelf, because I just think one day somebody will say, "Oh, do you remember? You know, Gareth's, his stuff's amazing." And the wide, it's like a lot of musicians and a lot of artists. I always think, why doesn't the wider world know about this? Why aren't we paying attention to this kind of comic storytelling?
Yeah.
And it's something that we're very lucky in the small press to have these people doing this sort of thing. So yeah, it's Thunders Gareth Hopkins. If you go to, he's on Twitter at grthink, T-H-I-N-K. He's at grthink.com, and you can buy his comics at grthink.bigcartel.com. There you go.
Yes, highly recommended across the board. My one is a Kickstarter that I received the printed copy of. I got the digital a while ago, but the actual book itself, I presume, was coming all the way from Australia or somewhere, like that. because this is the book by our friend Ryan K. Lindsay. And I want to get the
multiple critters. ACP appearer.
Yeah.
Yes.
Even though the time zones are an absolute bastard, but he's always a joy to have on. And he knows how to run a Kickstarter. So Ryan K. Lindsay, the artist in the letter is Chris Panda Mercier. Editor is Dan Hill, published by Comics Tribe. And this is She at the Tower of All That Is Known, which you know, it's been across Twitter. It did really well. This was one of those ones that it was going to cost a little bit to have it posted, but I kind of wanted the printed copy. And it is an experience that I'm glad I did, because the printed book in itself is just so, it's so much nicer and so much more enjoyable than what the digital was. It's a real advert for the printed book. Not to mention, it has my favourite cover of the year, which I'll talk about in a minute. But the book itself is, she is basically the main character, and that's her name, She. She's an intergalactic bounty hunter trying to find herself somewhere out there in the stars. Will she unlock all the secrets in the universe if it means giving up one of her own? With a lost daughter, an uncertain future, and a friend who always has her back, all her concerns will converge at the Tower of All That Is Known. That felt like I had to be dramatic right at the end. but this is just, it's proper pulp sci-fi. You know, in those days where you just dropped into a world, there's a badass main character. I don't know why, I felt like it gave me, it's sort of reminiscent of like 70s sort of pulp sci-fi stuff. You know, when, you know, there's just a badass character and then you're in the story with them. Do you know what I mean? And you're just following it. You know, you know where you are with this character. There is little hints to histories and stuff that go out, but all the way through they just kick ass, and she is very much like that. It's about, I think it's about 46 pages of story. It's a one and done. There is back matter. There's a few pin-ups from the likes of Sammy Cavella, who Dear Editor and things like that. That's another great book. Our friend Alfie Gallagher and the like.
Oh, cool.
Have pin-ups in there as well. And lots of other sort of Kickstarter goodies and stuff that they put in there. So the printed books are just really lovely. It's a hardback book as well. And I just want to talk about the book itself first, because it has a wonderful three-tiered sort of effect to it. It has a die-cut cover. The cover, if you haven't seen it, I did post something on Twitter, a couple of images of it. And the cover is, she has this really cool design visual mask. She's got like a helmet, and then she's got like almost like a skull design on the visor itself. And this nicely designed cover is her front and center. She's just looking at the reader. And the die cut is sort of, the visor itself, it cuts out of that. And then, so the first part, when you open the book, the first page is a nice sort of acetate with the skull design printed on it. And then underneath that is her face. So you've got like three layers of this cover going through.
That's some work.
Yeah. And it's down to the comics. Ryan does say in the back that it was the Comics Tribe guys that said, you should do this. I think the editor was like, dude, we could do something like this for the cover. So fair play. Because it must have been, you know, it bumped the price up to do this sort of thing as well. Because it's a thick cover as well. It's not, you know, the actual sort of die cut. It's like real thick. It's really nicely made. Plus the comic, that's comic smell. We'll know what I'm talking about. But the smell of the printed page. It's also got like a nice sort of metallic silver lettering on it as well. So just think about all that cost. So I'm glad it made its goal. But the story itself, you know, just a pulpy sci-fi character piece. I don't want to spoil anything for you, but there are some... it's slightly oversized as well. It's slightly bigger than your regular comic book. And I think one thing I did notice was the lettering and the speech bubbles and stuff did seem big to me. Not in a sort of like, oh, they're massive, you know, this is too large. But it was almost, it felt like it was designed smaller and then they scaled it up a little bit.
Okay.
I have to show you guys what I mean by it. Yeah. But there are these nice lettering touches as well, because there are those moments, and we've had, everyone must have experienced these when they're creating comic books. You know, when you have two characters having a dialogue, just say they're talking on radios or, like, you know, in earpieces and stuff, and you have to do the narration boxes, the bubbles.
Yeah, done that many a time.
And they've got it in this, and it's really cool because she has like a sort of an AI sort of character on her ship, and it's got like a very simplistic sort of face that almost has like a power button as it is as the front of its head, in some kind of way. And she's got like a, she's got quite a visual sort of mask. When you sort of pan out and like they're doing those narration panels, I swear I've seen this somewhere before, but the narration panels have a little symbol of that character's head or mask. So you know exactly who's talking, okay, yeah, because you, yeah, can, yeah, see their face. I have to show you. But I swear I've seen the effect somewhere before, but if not, then fair play.
Yeah, it rings a bell with me, actually. Yeah. I can't think.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But Chris's artwork is lovely. The character design, you know, I mean, they've created, let's underline this, she's a badass bounty hunter, and she's hot. is that sort of, but she looks like she can kick ass. She's got like a cool sort of like, I don't know how to explain the suit. It's almost Mass Effect like. It's a video game, Tony, but in its design. But there's alien races. There's some, you know, it's a colourful book as well. A lot of sci-fi stuff can get quite dark and gloomy, but there is colour from page to page, and yeah. There's character stuff. There's some nice action. There's mole men like monsters that, when I saw some of the designs in the background, I was like, oh, they're a little more graphic than I thought they were. But you don't see that in the comic book itself. It's interesting to see it in like the behind the scenes back matter. Some great dialogue all the way through, and by the end, there's a nice sort of twist. I thought it was going in one, because she. Is her daughter is missing, sort of lost somewhere in the galaxy, and I thought the character's motivations were going in one way, and they weren't necessarily. So make of that what you will. But yeah, they're also a cool. There's a cool sort of sequence that focuses. She has like a cybernetic eye. She does as well, which when she gets angry, it goes to like different colours, and that's used in some really great ways. There's flashbacks that kind of reminded me, well, not reminded me, you know, that sort of Mr. Miracle, you know, when things go weird, they put all those, you know, the Mitch Gerrard's one where it goes fragmented and a little, yes, bit, you're, yeah, not quite sure. Yeah. They do a little bit of that. They blur some stuff out with the flashbacks, like with, and over speech bubbles, so you can't quite see what they're talking about, which is a nice touch.
Oh, I get you. Yeah.
So you're thinking, well, what are the motivations going here? There was one panel which, there's one action scene where a character gets killed in a pretty dramatic way. There's an impaling that happens. And that sequence didn't work as well for me as I thought it would, because I'm not always one for, you know, let's see the gore. But on the moment when they landed on the thing that impaled them, it wasn't too completely clear what had happened until after the fact. But that's a minor quibble, because you still, I mean, when it pans out, you're like, oh shit, oh dear. Yeah, and there's some great sci-fi sort of ideas in here as well that I haven't really seen before. Yeah. So if it's the start of a new character that's going to move forward, I look forward to seeing what they could do with this. It seems like it's a combination that's worked really well. So I look forward to more. So there is a Kickstarter page, and it's if you go to Comics Tribe, she.comicstribe.com, you can tell they're legit. They've got an ISBN as well.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Yeah. So yeah, very, very good. Another home run from Lindsay, and so it was really good.
Nice one.
But like I say, the digital itself, there were all the effects in certain ways of playing. It just felt, because Chris's work is so clean, and there was a few moments where it was slightly shaky cane like in its sort of line work, but it was so so clean to the point of, in a PDF, it didn't have the same effect as when I was reading it. Do you know what I mean? When some artists have that, where there are artists so clean that you kind of need to see it on printed paper. Yeah. You need to experience
it. It's still number one for me, the printed page. Yeah. You know,
Yeah. And this book is clearly made by people that was like, we really want to have this really nice printed book. So, you know. Yeah. And it's worth it. So you can always breathe a sigh of relief when Kickstarter is not a regret.
yeah, there's a few unboxing videos I've sent you. Yeah.
Sometimes you just take a punt on stuff and it doesn't work out, but that's the way it goes.
Yeah. But we will always champion the ones that do it right, and Ryan and Ryan and the crew definitely do that. And we hope we did everyone we talked about in this episode justice. Which I don't know why I flash back to whenever I say the word justice, I always think, remember the day to day.
Justice. There ain't no justice.
I just want to say it, but it's probably a reference that only a few people might get. But prove me wrong, folks. But we hope you enjoyed this week's episode. Next week we'll have a guest and a very exciting work to talk about.
Yeah.
But for now, it's just been us three talking about books we like.
That was all right. I enjoyed that.
Hope you enjoyed it.
Yeah, went all right.
If there's anything you want us to know about, especially in these crazy times, if there's any comic movements, comic events, comic workshops, whatever, whether it's an online con. Also, we hoped you enjoyed Small Press Day, which was this past Saturday.
Yeah, it sneaked up on me a bit, that one.
Yeah.
Completely, I didn't realise that till like way too late in the day.
Yeah, and then it was everywhere. So we hope you all supported your small press and indie creators, whether they be your friends or people you discovered. If not, stay tuned to the show, because you might discover a few more. And probably if you listen to our back catalogue, but don't blame us for anything you might hear in that. Anyway, if there's anything you want us to know about, email us awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter @theawesomepod. If you do the Book of Faces, go to facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast. Likewise, if you want to get involved with some great comic chat, or you know, just maybe you're making comics right now and you want some advice on things, or you're planning a digital event, or if you want details on the drink and draw, then go to Facebook and join the group Awesome Comics Talk. There's a wonderful community of people on there. I can say,
and we got the competition, haven't we?
Yes, we have.
So
yes,
I sent out the prize to Jay Frettingham, who won the name competition just the other day. So she'll be getting that hopefully today. Have you closed it, D?
It's closed. Closed on sort of Saturday morning.
Right. Okay. So the back of the DVD summary of the story, I think we've had about 25 entries, something like that.
Really
good. Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty good. So I'll stick them. What do you want me to do? Do you want me to stick it, number them, stick it in a Dropbox link, and everyone can go in?
I think that's
a
great idea. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
And once we give, I'll put up a poll. We're liaising. You put up a poll and you'll vote. So you won't know who you're voting for. You're just voting on the idea as opposed to the name.
Yeah. So it'll just be vote 1, 2, 3, 4, whatever it's going to be.
Yeah.
Yeah. I suppose that's the best way of doing it, isn't it? I suppose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can't think of a fairer way of doing it.
Yeah.
I don't think our readers, listeners would be biased, just to keep it anonymous, so you're judging it on
ideas. Or do you want us to pick out the best 10? It's a lot to read. Do you want us to pick out the best 10 and we can stick 10 up? Should we do that?
Yeah, we'll do that.
Yeah, okay.
There's an awful lot there to read. And I would hate to think that, I mean, we've read it all, but I'd hate to think just people voted on the first one.
For anyone that doesn't know, we're doing a fun sort of creative sort of challenge for everyone that is on the Awesome Comics Talk group, where it's, you know, we've had the first one come up with a name for a comic. Then there's going to be the pitch of what it is. It's essentially the synopsis of what the book is. Next stage is going to be, is it going to be the logo, the next stage?
Yeah, the masthead for the book.
The masthead for the book. then it's going to be a cover. Is that what it is? I think.
Well, it's character design.
Character design is next, and then a cover, and it's basically and just cover. A bit of fun. That,
yeah,
there's absolutely no one's going to get any monetary benefit from this. But it,
no,
is it,
you
it,
go if you win the round, you get a prize. I'll send you a prize.
We're getting out prizes. But yeah, it's going to be. We've had some great stuff. People have really gotten involved in it, and it's been really good. And yeah, I'm a big fan of the name that won out.
It's interesting reading some of the things like our title. How would I design a masthead for that? Because the story would lend itself to how you would design the masthead.
Yeah, that's true.
Some are kid friendly, some are quite dark.
Yeah,
and yeah,
yeah.
Interesting. We'll see. Yeah. It's a good exercise.
Yep, and it's going to be interesting to see what you people think of it. So get to Awesome Comics Talk on Facebook. The only reason to go to Facebook. Thank you for listening to us, whether it's on the website, awesomecomics.podbean.com. If you listen to us on iTunes, subscribe, leave a review, and just get the word out about this show so more people listen to it and then think, what did I waste 2 hours of my life doing that for? but thank you for listening to us, whether it was on any of the networks, like Spotify, Stitcher, Podnose, Podknife. What are the networks we on, Tony?
Pod Sexy Nazi Nuns.
What can you say? Oh, that's probably a network.
Odd Sexy Nazi Nuns.
Yeah. What does that? What's the acronym? Never mind. I'm not going to actually take this discussion any further than it needs to. Actually.
PSNN.
Right. Okay. Please. We hope you didn't listen to us on that. But if you did, thank you, and join us for the next week's episode. Where can people find us online, etc.? Tony.
Tributepress.bigcartel.com. If you're trying to contact me, don't do it on Twitter, because I'm not on Twitter at the moment. So I'll get back to you eventually.
There you go. That's on Instagram as well, isn't it?
Oh, I'm on Instagram. Yeah, find me on it. I'm padlocked on Instagram. There you go.
But Tribute Press are on Instagram, aren't they?
Oh, we are. Find us there. Oh, big shout out to Grant Richards, because I got his Hercules picture framed this week.
Sweet.
That's going up in my office.
Amazing. Yeah.
Absolutely amazing. You should crop your face out of the picture and show everyone.
Yeah, I might do that, actually. Yeah, no, that I've done that. It's on my Instagram. Yeah, I'll stick it on the Tribute Press one as well. It's fucking sexy. Lovely. AF, I believe that picture is.
There you go.
The amount of hours of modelling I had to do for Grant for that picture.
I know.
You know, just to get the right emotion, the right, you know, emphasis.
Oh, I feel a bit sick. Dan, where can people find you online, etc.?
You can find me on Twitter at Vanguard Comic, and you can read Vanguard at vanguardcomic.com.
Nice. And you can find me if I do it. Do it, I'm here. God, any chance I get to just quote that film, I will. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Jester Diablo. And for more artwork, I'm doodling things. Some things may be for things, but you won't know.
Doodling and diddling.
Anyway, so follow me there. thank you for listening, everyone. Hope you enjoy reading those comics that you just decided to pull off the shelf. And from everyone here at Awesome HQ, who are all laughing at their own jokes right now.
Yes.
from Dan, Tony, and myself. Have a brilliant week. We hope wherever you are, you're safe and healthy and just well and loving life as much as you can, because we love you and we love comics. So
yeah, that's true.
Go for it.
We love comics.
Yeah.
Was it Chris? Do you think he's seen through the episode?
Oh,
Chris, you're still here, Chris.
Chris, if you're still here.
You made it this far, hats off.
Yeah. Well done, Chris. This has all been for you.
He probably booted him off. He'll never be back.
I know.
He bought my comic, Shawshank
Redemption, where Tim Robbins' characters have to crawl through that shit when it comes at the end. Like, it's like all the rain is breath. He's got through it.
Essentially, that is the journey of our listeners, isn't it? The Shawshank Redemption is basically a metaphor.
Would be a prison rape to start with, you know.
And he'd tunnel through shit and into the atmosphere.
And Morgan Freeman just narrating how you got through it.
Yeah.
Oh dear. Anyway, go forth, read loads of comics, have a brilliant week, and as always, from everyone here, we wish you a Merry Christmas, and as always, what do they do, guys?
Stay awesome. Fuck that up. That's on me.
It's good though.
No, it's not on you. It's on all of us. Apart from you, Chris. We love you.
Yeah.
Bye everyone.
Bye. See you later. Chris,
fucking hell, he's gonna think I'm taking a piss. He's a really nice guy. He messaged me on 11 o'clock comics saying that that's the best episode of 11 o'clock comics I've heard, and thanks for being on it. Can I buy your comics? I said, oh. He says, do you do a podcast? Well, I said, yeah. So I sent him the link, and he said, I'll give that a listen. Oh, and then fucking he'd be asking for his money back.
You could go for this the episode.
He's a super nice guy, and I would just.
I wouldn't have poured it on so thick if I'd known that, because I proper it was like I was tarring a new road.
Feel free to use any of this in the outtakes.